You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
My name is Mary Joan Parrish Ferner, and I was born January 9th, 1937, in Wichita, Kansas.
Joan Ferner is the salt of the earth. She is kind, funny, beautiful, and faithful. She is part of the Parrish family, who are prominent in Centerville, Utah, where she's lived most of her life. She grew up on a farm and enjoyed singing in her younger years. She met her husband Blair through a blind date set up by her mom. Together, Joan and Blair raised five incredible children. Joan was a stay-at-home mom until all of her kids were grown, and then she went to college and became a first grade teacher for 15 years. She and Blair served a mission in Spain, and she's been a faithful disciple of Christ throughout her life.
I have two sisters. I'm the youngest. My older sister's Anne, and my other sister's Norma. We're very close, about 4 years for all three of us, so Mother was quite busy. My dad had a job there in Wichita, Kansas. It was during the Depression, and he was really hard for work, and so he was a traveling salesman back there. And then they came back and lived in Salt Lake for a little while. He was working to be a pharmacist, and it was during the war, and my mother was working at the arms plant. But then when I was about four, my dad decided to buy his dad's farm in Centerville. And so that's when we moved to Centerville. It was wonderful. And we were by my grandma and relatives next door, and I loved it. Where we lived, it was between Parrish Lane and Chase Lane. It was settled by Samuel Parrish. And he and Fanny Dack moved here, and they homesteaded in Centerville. And then their son, Joel, he built the house on Parrish Lane. And he had two wives. And so Centerville, between Parrish and Chase Lane, was settled by most of their children. And they had their families, and right next to us was Uncle Parley, and next to him, Uncle Charles, and across the street was Uncle Hiram, and across the street was Uncle Will. But since, it's all been divided, and we live in the Parrish Heights Ward, and this is the Parrish Heights Subdivision, and this type of thing. So it's my name to fame. I'm the old stock, because I've lived in Centerville all my life, and I love Centerville. I loved the farm. It was all country. In Centerville, we used to herd the cows up Parrish Lane, and many relatives were helping each other with the farming. And actually, my dad was a gentleman farmer because he was a pharmacist. Mother did not work on the farm at all, and he made it sure that we were not milking cows. He didn't feel like that was a good job for girls. So we would help in other ways. We'd help with the hauling of the hay. And when I got a little older, a friend gave me a baby lamb, and it had been rejected by its mother. And we had to feed it with a bottle, and I became very attached to this lamb, and it became attached to me. In fact, it followed me everywhere I went. My first name is Mary, and people recited Mary had a little lamb when they saw me, and I called her Amber. And as she grew up, she grazed on the weeds, on the grass, and then her taste buds developed a little later, and she started to graze on Grandma Parrish's flowers. Well, Grandma Parrish took great pride in her beautiful flowers, and she did not like Amber eating them. So one day, Amber disappeared. I asked Dad where she had gone, and he answered something like, "Oh, she's grown up. She's gone to the field." I questioned that when he said, 2 or 3 weeks later, we were having a wonderful meal of lamb chops, and I knew what had happened. But even though I was sad, I actually understood, because we lived on a farm, and we raised animals for food, not for pets. Another thing that I enjoyed was I had a three-legged cat, and I don't know how she lost her leg, but she limped along and did quite well. She was an outside cat, and every year She had a litter of kittens, and whenever she was about to deliver her kittens, she wanted me around. So I made a box for her in the root cellar behind her house. I would go in and sit with her while her babies came, and if I attempted to move, she became agitated, so I would just stay with her until she had completed her delivery of kittens. We had so many relatives that after dinner each night, we would gather together and we would play games. At that time, we didn't have any TV or smartphones or anything like that, but we would play Run Sheepy Run and Red Rover and Murder in the Dark. And sometimes we would play baseball with a stick or a rock. And we had a great time. And we would play until dark and then we'd go to bed. My particular cousin that was my age was my cousin Sylvia. And then there was a girl, Carolyn Smith, across the street. And we were all buddies. We sleep at each other's house and this kind of thing. My sisters and I, we had a real good relationship. My older sister, she was always very patient with me. In fact, there was a story about her that when I was about 4 years old, my older sister, Anne, she came home with a gumdrop turkey she had made at school. And she was so proud of it, and she put it on the shelf in her bedroom. And I looked at that turkey with all those delicious gumdrops on it for about 3 or 4 days. And then one day, when no one was around, I climbed up on a chair and took the gumdrop turkey down from the shelf and ate it. And when my sister noticed it was gone, she knew exactly who had eaten it. And she was very sad. And I felt very bad that I'd made my sister so unhappy. And I felt sorry that I'd eaten her gumdrop turkey. But my sister Anne was always very patient with me. But my sister Norma occasionally didn't want me around so much. And she would call me Pee-wee. I didn't like her to call me that. But most of the time, she was pretty nice. And when we got a little bit older, our mother was on the general board of the primary. She'd been on the board of the primary for 25 years. And she wrote lessons for the primary children. And every year, she would go on primary conventions. And it was usually in the summertime when we were home. She would go for about a week. Well, we were pretty much alone because Dad worked on the farm in the day and the pharmacy at night. And we loved it when Mother was gone. We just sat around and we read comic books and we played games and we generally did nothing. But when it was time for Mother to come home, did we ever scramble? We washed the dishes, we cleaned up the house, we got everything in order. And Mother was always thrilled that we'd gotten along so well while she was gone. Little did she know. I do remember when I was baptized, it was in Bountiful. It was a special day for me. I remember I felt very clean. I knew I would. So all of my growing up years, my dad didn't go to church. And it seemed like every Sunday, Mother would say, go invite your dad, see if he wants to come. But he didn't. So Mother always took us to church. But my dad was a hard worker. And he loved us and was a wonderful provider for us. Mother did some piano lessons. In fact, all the money that she gleaned from the piano lessons, she kept in a little box, and it was the tithing box. And so she paid the tithing through her piano lessons. It seems like Mother was very busy, but whenever I had a problem, Mother was always there to listen and to help and counsel and love. And I worked with my father on the farm. And so he would have me take care of the rabbits and the chickens, and I would help with feeding the baby calves. I loved all that part of working with my dad, and he had us go in the field and haul the hay, and so he was a wonderful father. But then, as we all got older, and all of us girls, we all got married in a year and a half, and my dad decided that he wanted to be with us on our wedding. And he always kept his drugstore open on Sunday. And so it took a leap of faith. He was coming back to the church. And he closed the store on Sunday. And after that, he was very, very faithful. He always went to the temple. He was wonderful influence on all of our grandchildren, and we loved him. I went to school up the street. It was just the Centerville Elementary School that my aunt, Jenny P. Stewart, had taught. I think my dad went there. I went there. My sisters went there. But I enjoyed my years of elementary school. I had wonderful teachers. I remember that my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Stenberg, also had a side little club for us to teach us to sew on buttons and darn a sock and things like that. And we enjoyed that very much with her. And in the sixth grade, the school put on a play, and I got the part of Mother Goose Mary, and I sang a solo. And my Uncle John came to the play, and he said that I had a very nice voice. And later on, I took singing lessons from Uncle John and enjoyed being in choruses and did some solo work. And so I did play the piano, but I didn't practice it. And they paid a lot of money for me to take lessons that I didn't practice very well. But I did appreciate learning somewhat. And my mother taught all of my children piano when they were very young. And then as they got a little older, we had piano teachers. I went to South Davis Junior High and then Bountiful High for 2 years. And then I graduated from Davis High. And in my teenage years, as I was just going to junior high, some of the girls were cliquey as I got into the seventh grade. And sometimes they would gather together and talk about things that I didn't feel like were the best to do. And it was a nice, popular group. And I would go at recess and do with them a little bit. But then I decided that I didn't want to be part of that. And I had one of my friends from our ward said to me, she said, if you don't become part of our popular group, then I won't be your friend anymore. And I did not become part of their group, and she never was my friend again. And I felt bad about that, but I just didn't feel right about what was going on there. And because that I broke up from just really close friends, I was able to make many friends and reach out to other people and get acquainted with many than just a little group. And I felt it was a good choice. So about when I was 13 or maybe going on 14, in Farmington, they always had a dance about once a month. And I had this young man, Paul Millard. He was about my age, and he invited me to come to the dance in Farmington. And so I would go with him. His brother would pick me up. We would go and dance, and it was a lot of fun. And the only thing that bothered me a little bit was that I was about a head taller than him. But I went with several dances with him, and we became good friends. In high school, I got into more the government, the leadership, and that kind of thing. And I actually didn't seek after that. At those days, they would just say, hey, we want you to, and you run, and we'll make posters and what have you. So I got to be the vice president or something of Bountiful High. That was just a 2-year. And that was fun because it was just the beginning of the Bountiful High. And so we chose the Bountiful Braves and things like that. And then went to Davis High. And again, I got to be the Girls Association president. And we had special assemblies and a special evening. And I was in a chorus. In fact, I actually sang a solo at my high school graduation. And it's interesting. It was Bless This House. And the secretary in my high school was a very lovely lady, but she had cancer. And after I sang, she asked if I would sing it at her funeral, which I did. And I felt it was a great privilege. So I enjoyed those parts of my high school. When I was about 17, my dad was in the Lions Club. And they were in need of a girl from Centerville to be in the Rodeo Queen contest. And my dad volunteered me. Of course, they needed someone who could ride a horse. And my dad bragged and said I'd been riding horses all my life. Well, that was not quite true. We had a pinto pony, and my sisters liked to ride him, and I rode him once in a while, but not very often. I was in a very awkward situation and didn't want to disappoint my dad, so he signed me up to be a contestant in the Rodeo Queen contest. One of the men in the Lions Club said he had a beautiful, gentle horse, and I could ride it. My other concern was that I'd put on a few pounds, and I wasn't as thin as I would like to be. So I went and bought myself a pair of jeans that were very tight. They made me look thinner, but they also made me walk stiffer. I tried riding the horse, and the horse sensed my inexperience and kept trying to bite me. So in addition to everything else, I was afraid of the horse. I did not know how to ride a horse, and as the horse trotted, I bumped up and down. Well, the night of the contest came, and I prepared myself as best as I could in my tight jeans and my shirt and hat. And when my name was called, I got my biting horse to trot instead of gallop and bounce myself on the horse all around the arena. Needless to say, I did not win the contest.
It was during her high school days that Joan was introduced to Blair Ferner, who would soon become her husband.
My husband's name is Blair Oberg Ferner, and he was from Sugar House, Utah. But he was living in Salt Lake at the time because he had been on a mission. In fact, he didn't go on his mission until he was 27, but he'd served in World War II, and he was studying to be an airplane mechanic. But he never had to go abroad because the war ended. And so came out of World War II, he went to the university and got an engineering degree. And he told his dad he would like to go on a mission. And he said, if you go on a mission, you pay for yourself. So he worked for a couple of years, and then he served a mission in Argentina. He loved Argentina. In fact, it seemed like more often than not, the dinner table was talking about his mission to Argentina, and thus all of our kids went on a mission. It was just always a big deal in our house. And so he had only been home from his mission when we got married for just less than a year. When I was 17, my mother had a stillborn baby. She had always wanted more children, and she'd found a doctor that was helping her, and the baby was born dead. And it put her in a terrible depression. And she recovered by getting busy, and she started working, which was fine. And so she was working in at the University of Utah in Mr. Wolf's office. They were consulting engineers for the hot water heating at the University of Utah. And they did heating and air conditioning, this kind of thing. And so, but she enjoyed that, and that pulled her out of the depression. My husband was 12 years older than I am. I met him on a blind date. He worked in the office where my mother worked. And I had just been on a blind date with a fellow that I was very uncomfortable with. And I thought, I'm through with blind dates. This is it. In fact, I was glad I got home from there, and I was sleeping very nicely on the couch when Mother came up and said, Joan, there's someone on the phone, and he wants a blind date. And I said, Mother, I am through with this. I do not want. Well, just go talk on the phone. So I went and talked to him, and sounded pretty nice, and had some tickets for the New York Philharmonic. So I thought that sounded reasonable enough, so I said, yes, I'll go. Well, then in talking to Mother, he said he's a little older and he's bald. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. So he came to the door and I thought he was cute. He didn't seem all that bald. Nice looking. And so I went out and we had a wonderful time. And so we just continued to date and decided, why wait? Let's get married. So we got married in November 10th, 1955. I felt he was a wonderful man. What I liked about him is he let me be me. I felt comfortable with him and like he was a real friend, and I felt I made a real good choice. It's been a wonderful life. I'm not saying it was all roses. There were ups and downs, but he was a good provider, a good man, and he made me very happy. I was still sewing my outfit the night before I got married. And it didn't turn out very well, so I had another little outfit that I stayed up most of the night to finish up so that I looked reasonably good when I went to my wedding. I went to the temple that day, and then we didn't have a wedding breakfast, and my husband took me to Bratton's Fish Place, and we had lunch together and spent the afternoon together while Mother and everybody else did all the work, and we arrived, and I wore my beautiful dress, and it was lovely, and my mother put on my wedding while I went off in clouds and La La Land, and she made my dress, and my dress was just beautiful. She had put ruffles in that, and I thought, practical as I am, let's make my dress pink, and then I can wear it to dances and things after. So she made this beautiful dress, and then she made it for my sister Anne. She was my bridesmaid, and my sister Norma was very pregnant, so she sat at the table taking names. And I had a nice long line, and it was in the old Centerville War Chapel. And so Mother didn't have a lot of money, and Dad, so they put up a few decorations, and we had someone make a cake. And then Mother felt like it was wonderful that we would have, it's November, we'll have warm grape juice and fruitcake. And I thought that sounded wonderful too. But since, I thought that was a strange dessert to have. But we had it, and it was a wonderful wedding. We were sealed in the Salt Lake Temple. And when I went in there, I had always wanted to go to the temple, and it was, I don't know, it was just a thrill of a lifetime. The whole day, my marriage and everything was very happy. And then we went on our honeymoon to the Northwest to meet his family.
As Joan said herself, it wasn't all roses when the two got married.
I lived in a ward that knew everybody, and it was really not appropriate to marry a man that old. And I got some vibes from the ward that I wasn't doing a very good thing. And then one of my dad's friends came up to me and said, if you marry that man, you're going to make the biggest mistake of your life. I listened to him, but I just felt good about marrying him. And so I let that go, but I did feel a little strange the way they were reacting to this. And so I went ahead and got married and had a lovely wedding. And we moved into the ward. And the ward people got to know him and just loved him.
About 2 years after getting married, the Ferners' little family began to grow.
Our firstborn son was named William after a family name that had been given to the eldest son in the family for several generations. We also gave him the name of his father, Blair. We called him Blair. We were anxious to have a child, but it didn't come really fast. So we had our first when I was 20, May 22nd, 1957. I went to the Holy Cross Hospital. And they put me right to sleep. So I didn't get to see my baby at all. And it seemed like a whole day. And I said, I haven't seen my baby. I want to see my baby. So they finally brought me my baby. And it just seemed fairly natural to be a mother. And I was so thrilled to have a little baby. And he was very cute. So it was wonderful. Although once I had the baby, I went into, I think, postpartum depression. And that was a hard time for me because then it wasn't a popular thing and nobody knew. So I didn't tell anybody. My husband knew. And he was very, very kind at that time. He gave me priesthood blessings and he allowed me to take some singing lessons. And I loved the ward, the Relief Society, and it pulled me all out of it. And I was able to go on. But I enjoyed my little baby a lot. We lived in Salt Lake just for a short time. And had our little baby. And then we built a home behind my mom and dad's house on my dad's farm. And so he was busy building that. And at the time, my mother-in-law had moved in with me. And we had a one-bedroom apartment in Salt Lake. Grandma Ferner, they had a big, mosquitoes were really bad. And there was an outbreak of encephalitis. Well, she got bit. And so she got a bad case of encephalitis. And so we were in this one-bedroom apartment, and they took her to the hospital, and they put her in ice. She had 104 fever, and they packed her in ice to bring it down. Well, eventually, she got over it, you know, and she went up to be with her daughter in Washington for a while we moved in and everything.
Joan and Blair raised their 5 kids in the home that they built right there on her dad's farm.
My husband, where he lived in South Salt Lake or in Sugar House, across the street was a house he liked. He got the plans and he drew it all up and did it all as far as the plans go because he was an engineer and it was his baby. He did a lot of the work, but the basement cement hardened up on him and so that was a problem. He didn't get that basement quite right. But other than that, he did a lot of the work and then we had people helping us.
And right about the time they were ready to move in, they welcomed their second child, Ray.
Ray was the second one, Ray Robert. Ray was born March 10, 1959. Ray was supposed to be born the 25th of March, and we were moving into our new house. And it was getting very close to move into our house, but I had to drive from Salt Lake back and forth. It was a very snowy day. And I was coming back home with my little baby Blair, and the roads were covered. And as I was going up the hill with my little baby in the car, somehow the car got pushed right over to park, and I got terribly stuck. Thank goodness for that, because I was almost ready, 9 months pregnant, and ready to have the baby, and there I was stuck, and I went to that door and a kind person allowed me to use the phone. I called my husband and we got back and we were fine. But just very soon after, Ray was born. And we were very tired. And the night that I said, Blair, I think the baby's coming. Oh, not tonight. I'm so tired. And I said, well, I still think it's coming. And so Ray came. And then we had Carl Parrish. Carl was born January 20th. 1961. And then it came a little sooner. We had them about 17 months apart, Paul Edgar. Paul was born August 27th, 1962. And then we had Mary Ellen, April 23rd, 1964. Everybody said, oh, I bet she was teased or all this, but she wasn't. She was treated very nice. We did have a foster girl when she was 8. We had Marjorie Charles, an Indian girl. Because at that time, they had the placement program. So we had her for about 8 years.
Joan was and is an incredible mom, and she dedicated all of her time to raising her kids.
Well, raising my children, I was able to stay home. And I appreciated that so much. My husband was a good provider, and he made it possible so that I could be there with the children. And I loved being home with them. That was a real wonderful part of my life. And when they were very young, I was very dependent on my husband. And he made most of the important decisions. And in his work, he was the only engineer hired by J.F. Heath. And it was a startup company. It was called the Heath Engineering Company. And when the children were a little older, I would say the oldest was around 10 or 11, Mr. Heath was mowing the lawn and he died. And Blair, my husband, had a big decision whether to get another job or to buy the small business. And he bought the business, and he was very stressed to help it succeed. So when important decisions about home came up, I depended on him to decide, but that didn't happen. He just told me, decide what needs to be done so I can work on the business. So I gathered all the little children together and told them that their dad was very stressed and we needed to help him. So that was when we took over the lawn mowing, the weeding, the garden picking, and everything that needed to be done around the house to ease his load. The children also had jobs at a young age because with a small business, you never know if you're going to get a paycheck or not. And I worried that we might not have enough money for them to serve the Lord on a mission. So all the children earned enough money to pay for their own mission, except Mary Ellen. We paid for her mission, and she financed her college education. With all the work, we still had fun as a family, As they got older, they all played the piano and took lessons. Every morning, we got up and had scripture study, and then we went to the church, where they had five pianos. Everyone got their practicing done before school, and that freed them up for work and after-school activities. On Monday night, we always had family home evening, where we had a lesson and a fun activity and a yummy treat. Each year, we went on a family vacation. We had a big seven-man tent, and we went camping. And most of the time, we camped in the mountains nearby. But one time we went to Yellowstone, another time we went to Kentucky to see my sister and her family, and another time we went to the Northwest. We always had a great time. When it came to the holidays, it wasn't like it is nowadays. We would never go out to dinner. So I would save a little bit of money each month, so that around Christmas, we could go out to dinner. And we would go to a nice place. We didn't ever ride the bus. And so it was our bus trip. So we would take our bus from Centerville to Salt Lake and meet our daddy. And then he had the car. And then we would go out to dinner and have this wonderful dinner. They could choose anything they wanted to eat. And so we did that every year. And that was always fun. And then on Christmas, it was just kind of the Christmas Eve dinner that we liked. And we would have our little nativity, and our grandma and grandpa came, and it was a special time. But we did have one Christmas. It was after my husband was taking over the business, and we did not have any money. And I worried about it, but our children weren't terribly demanding either. But I guess our oldest was around 12 and the others were younger. So we got the wonderful idea of let's make a present for each one of us in the family. And so we got some cute ideas. One was making tin can doll furniture. And they made that. Another made little stools. And anyway, there was hammering and all kinds of things going on and painting and what have you during that Christmas. And I told them that maybe they wouldn't get very much from us, but they could give from each other. And I'm telling you, under our tree was just packed with presents. I mean, you know, that they'd made for each other, just filled with out into the room and the whole bit. And that Christmas, the one thing I noticed from the children was instead of opening their present to see what they got, they were watching the person that was opening the present they were giving them, to see if they liked it. And it was just had a joyful spirit about the whole season, and the children appreciated each other and the kind things they did for each other. And it was one of our best Christmases. And then on New Year's, the kids would get so tired and go to bed. Well, but then I would set up the table and the candles and everything, and we'd wake them up. And then we'd have a little treat at 12 o'clock, you know, and greet the new year in. But the other holidays were just kind of special. Easter was the Easter eggs and stuff like that too. And birthdays were always special. And so we had good holidays. Having children was not easy for us. And each child we fasted and prayed for. Each one that entered our home was a treasured gift. We loved being parents. And after our fifth one, we wanted more children, but we could not conceive. I went to the doctor and we were tested. And he told me that I would never be able to have another child. The five that I had were gifts from heaven. His words proved right. I never was able to have another child. And we were so grateful for the five beautiful children we were blessed with.
Joan shared a few special things that make her proud of each of her kids, beginning with the oldest, Blair.
Being the eldest, he's always been a leader in our family. He took his role seriously to be a good example for the other siblings. He honored his priesthood. He became an Eagle Scout and helped his brothers attain that rank. He served an honorable mission and set a good example for his brothers and sisters to serve a mission. He married in the temple, raised an outstanding family, and has stayed active in the church and stayed true to his testimony. All of his brothers and sister have followed his example and leadership. He has shown love and encouragement to each of them. He is a wonderful son. Our second son, Ray, has always had a very tender side. He has always been concerned about others, those who were lonely, those who had no friends, those who were in need. He has also excelled in everything he attempted to do. He graduated from BYU summa cum laude with a master's degree. He went to his graduation, and we were surprised when they announced that he was the outstanding engineer of the year. We asked him about it, and he said, "It's really nothing." We didn't think so, and we were very proud of him. Ray has been challenged with some extremely hard trials in his life. When it seemed like everything was against him, he has chosen to not be hateful or bitter. Instead, he has chosen to trust in the Lord and to respond with love and forgiveness to others, and especially to those who have hurt him so much. He has moved on with his life of service and love. He is truly a great example to us all. He is a wonderful son. Our third son, Carl, has always been a very hard worker. In grade school, he got off to a bad start with the first grade teacher that didn't teach him the fundamental skills that he needed to know. He struggled to keep up with his class, so in the fourth grade, we had a little after-school class at home, and the teacher worked with me, giving us the materials we needed to help him to catch up, which he did all through his academic career. He had to work very hard to achieve his goals. He has never shunned hard work, and it has proven to serve him well. When he graduated from BYU, he graduated with honors. He even received a note from his fourth grade teacher congratulating him on his achievement. He has gone on to provide sufficiently for his family of six children, allowing his wife to stay home to nurture and care for the children. His love for others and his delightful sense of humor attracts others to him, and he has many friends. He is a wonderful son. Our fourth son, Paul, has always had a cheery personality, and when you meet with him, he always asks the question, "How can I help you, or do you need some help?" And he follows through. Those are not empty words with him. He's always ready to help others. His life has been one of service to his family and to his fellow man. His testimony has always been strong. And he has served in many capacities in the church. He was a scoutmaster for 14 years, and many of his scouts served missions. He has helped the missionary work go forward in Wisconsin by serving and sharing the gospel. He has been a wonderful bishop and served and strengthened the ward members. He has served and cared for his wife and family and always stands ready to help them and others whenever there is a need. He has been successful in his professional career and contributed many creative ideas to help the company grow. He is a wonderful son. Our beautiful daughter arrived at last. We were so thrilled with her. We always called her the frosting on the cake. Throughout her life, she has always put the Lord and family first. When she was almost finished at BYU, she announced that she would like to serve a mission. We were surprised and thrilled that she had made that decision because not many girls were serving missions at the time. After her mission and while she was finishing her schooling, she met and married a wonderful man in the temple. She continued to seek a doctorate degree in math and received a wonderful scholarship to finish her degree. In the meantime, she had her first baby, a son, and loved being a mother. When it came time to get a babysitter for her child, she couldn't do it and quit schooling and her scholarship and chose to be a stay-at-home mom for her five beautiful children. After they were grown, she went back to school and got her Doctor of Mathematics degree. When she finally got her dream job at the U of U, a call came from the Lord to her and her husband to serve a mission in the Jerusalem Center in Israel. She quit her job after one semester and chose to serve the Lord. She is truly a daughter of God and a wonderful daughter to us.
Once her kids were grown, Joan realized her dream of becoming a teacher.
So I had the best of both worlds. I raised my children, and then I graduated as a teacher and taught to first grade for 15 years. I had never gone to college. I got married. And then all of our kids graduated from college. And I always wanted to be a teacher. And so I went back to school when Mary Ellen ended college. It took me 5 years because I had to do a lot of basic courses before I could even get into it because it had been so many years. I was so worried. I thought, these kids have young minds and I don't. So I was all worried about it. So I went and found that a lot of kids played around quite a bit and weren't very serious. And I was working my head off. So I could compete all right. But I went 3 years to the U and finished my 2 years at Weber College. And then when I was about to graduate, there was an overload of teachers. And they weren't even hiring some of them. And I said to my husband, as I was getting into my last year, I said, well, I don't know if I should go into teaching. I don't think I can get a job. I'm old and everything. And he said, well, if you don't finish, you for sure won't get a job. So I finished and I got a job at Washington Elementary here in Bountiful. I knew the principal and the secretary, and so I had a little in, and the principal knew my dad in their ward, and I got hired the day before school started. They had just decided to divide a class, and so I spent most of the night putting up my little bulletin boards and getting everything ready, and I started teaching school. First grade were darling, so cute. Some of them were naughty, but most of them were just adorable. And during that time, you had to teach them to read. Now they teach them in kindergarten, but it was so delightful to teach them. Once the light went on, it was just really rewarding. And then I worked there for about 6 years, and then they gave me a leave of absence, said that I could definitely get a job back after I served a mission. We've always thought that we were going to go on a mission, but I was working then. I had gotten my job teaching first grade, and my husband, being older, was, I think that he had retired when I was teaching. He got what is called an acoustical neuroma, and it was affecting his hearing, and so he couldn't hear very much in 1 year, and so we saw a doctor about it, and It is a benign tumor in the ear, and it would eventually get larger and give him trouble. So this was a big deal. And two things could happen in the operation. One side of his face would droop, or he would entirely lose his hearing. And neither one was a very good outcome, but we definitely didn't want his face to droop. So we talked with the Lord about it and went ahead with the operation. And they had to go through the skull. And we promised the Lord that if he came through it all right, we would choose to serve a mission. It was an 8-hour operation, and our son Blair came and stayed with me. And when my husband came out of recovery, we saw his beautiful smile. We were very grateful that the Lord had blessed him and the doctor. And it took him a while to heal, and then we began our mission plans at the end of the school year that I was teaching. And then I was going to have a leave of absence, and I probably would be guaranteed a job when I got back because I still could teach some more. My husband was so wanting to go back to Argentina. And when the call came, he opened it with great anticipation. And it was a call to Malaga, Spain. Well, despite his disappointment, that was the place the Lord wanted us to go. And so that's where we would go. And so we studied Spanish during the summer. And then we went to the MTC for a couple of months. And then we headed for Spain in October 1992. And it was kind of a mission that was proselyting, helping members in this kind of a mission. Blair could speak Spanish, but I'll have to admit I struggled with the language. So while I was there, I communicated with hand gestures and terrible language, but I got by. This time that we served, it was a time that my husband and I were expected to walk in step for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Well, we hadn't done that before, and sometimes we got out of step and had some differences of opinion. But as we worked on each other and our missionary work, I can truly say that this mission cemented our marriage. It's there that I got to really know my husband. We inspected baptismal fonts, we designed chapels, we cleaned mildew from chapels and ordered supplies and furniture for the chapel. in Ceuta. And he was the branch president in Ceuta. And we worked closely with the missionaries. And we loved the people and we loved the work. But the main thing, we learned to love each other better. And we walked in step and we grew closer together as we worked together. Throughout our mission, we didn't have any baptisms, but we did our best. And we loved the work and the people. And we hope that the Lord accepted our offering.
After their mission, Joan returned to teaching for 8 years before retiring. They also moved into a home that they had built on the same plot of land as her parents' home and the first home that they had built. They lived in her parents' home for a short while fixing it up and giving her parents payment before they passed.
My sister was right next to us, her plot. She built her house, but then her husband got his doctorate degree, and they moved to Kentucky. And so they rented their house for many years. My other sister was settled in Logan, and so we eventually bought her lot from her. And then when my sister came back, she built on a lot, and I built on a lot. So we've lived close to each other, and now I moved. But my son has bought my house. So my son Paul is living next to my sister. It's called the Parish Compound.
Throughout her life, Joan has given a lot of effort to a few things that she's quite passionate about. Those things are serving in the church, attending the temple, tending her garden to preserve and can food, and being grandma.
I've worked in all of the organizations. I've been in the teaching, not as much as the leadership, actually. I worked in the library, and the kids were wonderful helping with that. I've worked in the scouting. All of the boys are Eagle Scouts, and I've worked in the music. In fact, now I'm teaching Relief Society, but that's something I never could do without the help of the Lord. I'll tell you that right now. I've had the privilege to serve in many ways, and I have enjoyed it very much and grown. I just love to go to the temple. It's a place of peace, and it seems like every time I go, I learn a little something different, and it just has such a beautiful spirit. I like to go every week because it carries me through the week in a special way. And the last time I went to the temple, my son Blair had some Swedish names. My husband's half Swedish. Then I got the impression that maybe we should do more Swedish names. Maybe he's up in heaven working on them up there, and we need to do our part here. So it was a fun impression. We've always preserved our food. I felt like it was healthy for us, and I would just can everything. My mother always canned. And the nice thing is we had relatives living around. We had Aunt Jenny living with us, and Grandma was right next door. So anytime Mother would come in with a couple of bushels of peaches or something, it always impressed me that Grandma and Aunt Jenny came over with their paring knife, and they were ready to help. And they always seemed like they were there when Mother was doing some canning or things like that. And so I just carried on that tradition, although I didn't have Grandma and Aunt Jenny to help me. The kids did help. And then we always raised a garden. And we had to do the garden. My husband helped the tilling in between and that, but the picking and the weeding was up to the children. And they had to do it. They didn't like it very well, but they did it. And so it would be their chore that day is to pick a row of beans or something like that. And then we always froze it or canned the beans, or we did everything. We had squash and raspberries and strawberries and carrots and potatoes and everything. And we just kept going until I sold that property to my son, and he's going to keep the garden going. Especially when I retired, then I could give my full time to the garden. And we had lots of produce. In fact, some of this stuff, we had enough for all of Centerville. It was so big and so much that anyway, we could share it and enjoyed it. And the children learned to eat really well. I think being a grandma is absolutely wonderful. Of course, every grandparent says that. And so just to be our grandchildren were wonderful. And I didn't like to discipline them. I like to let the parents do the discipline and then just make it fun when they came. And so we would have sleepovers and do fun things together. And I really enjoyed that time of my life when we had the grandchildren. And Paul would come from Wisconsin, but the others would visit often. And there were times we could tandem and where the parents went on vacation or did different things. And it was wonderful to see our children be parents. And they were wonderful parents. And with their spouses, they had wonderful families. And I just loved the little grandchildren. But then they grew up, and now we have great-grandchildren. So I don't have as much involvement with the great-grandchildren because their grandparents are in charge of them. I'm just a step back. But I sure do enjoy seeing them and visiting with them.
Things are pretty different than they were in 1937 when Joan was born. I asked her what she thinks of all the changes she's witnessed throughout her life.
The whole world is different. Didn't have all these things that they have now. And then it's just been amazing with all the technical things that have happened. And I could use my phone and talk to my daughter in Jerusalem in just seconds. It's just amazing how it's even changing more and become more difficult and more wonderful. So it's just been big changes in my life. I'm glad I could experience it.
I then asked Joan for her best advice for creating a strong family and marriage.
Love their spouse but enjoy their children and spend time with them and appreciate. It seems like the child rearing years go so fast. When you've lived a long life, you think, well, that was really quite a short period, a time that is definitely gone. Once it's over, have fun along the way and enjoy and appreciate what you've got.
After a long, beautiful, wonderful marriage, Joan had to say a temporary goodbye to her sweetheart, Blair.
He was doing pretty well, and he was working on an airplane. He loved to do hobby. He was closing the door, and he fell down the stairs, and it knocked him out. And it was during COVID, and it was an awful time, and he broke 9 ribs. And then I couldn't go be with him, and it was hard on him because he said, well, Joan, where are you? You're not here. You know, I just felt terrible. But they wouldn't let me go in to the hospital or anything. So he was there 3 days. And they said, we need to take him to a place because he can't even walk. And I said, he's coming home. And they said, no, you won't be able to take care of him. I said, he's coming home. And we took him home. And he went on hospice and we got help that we needed to help with showering and things like that. And amazingly, he recovered. And they took him off hospice, but we had a little bed for him there on the main floor and everything so that he could manage. But he was wobbly. So I'd always get up at night and help him and things like that. And we got up one night and we had the walker and everything ready. I don't know what happened, but he stumbled. And he went down, I went down, the walker came on top of us, and it was a terrible fall. And I just wept. I thought, oh no. So he seemed all right, but then we decided to take him to the doctor for sure. And he had broken his neck a vertebrae in his neck. And so that meant a collar and all of this, and it was very hard. But we brought him back home. He was a good sport with the whole thing. But I found that someone sick is grouchy and irritable, and someone who's caring for someone who's sick gets tired and worn out and grouchy and irritable. And I felt like this is going to be either the worst time or the best time of our life. And so I talked with the Lord about it and asked him to help me to have patience, to care for him, and to make it a pleasant time. And every time I felt like saying a crossword or retort, I would have that warning, I'm helping you now. And actually, the last 2 years that we spent together was the happiest years of our lives. We loved each other, we kind to each other, and it was a wonderful treat to care for him. And when he passed, it was time for him to go. He was through, and I was ready to let him go because he had finished his life beautifully. And so his passing was sad in a way, but happy in a way that he could be on to his glory. And I realized that I needed to finish up before I could join him. So I'm finishing up now, and I hope that I'll be worthy to join him and be with him forever. The gospel and the Savior has been a big part of my life. It has been my life. Someone said that yield to the Lord and he'll make more of your life than you make of yourself. And I have found that through the callings and the opportunities I've had to serve in the church, that many of them I have felt so incapable, but the Lord has helped me rise to the occasion, and I have grown and to know of his love and caring, and that he truly is there. And by striving to keep the commandments and serve, my life has been very happy. And even through trials, I have felt his comfort and blessing. It has been with me, especially with the death of my husband. And so I love the Lord. The Lord is there. He is always there. I have found that. And I have found that even though my husband is on the other side, I have never been alone. I have never felt alone, but I have felt that the Lord is always with me and can guide and help me in any stage of my life that I'm in. And so I do want my family to know to trust in the Lord. In fact, one of my favorite scriptures is, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thine ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path." And I have felt that throughout my life, of his guidance and direction, and how I have felt his love and caring. Stay true to the teachings of the church, and you will be happy. Even through your hard times, you've got help. I've had hard times. When I was about 30, I was trying to earn some money and did a lot of babysitting and things like that, and it was just too much for me. And then I was questioning the church and everything else. It would just seem like a terrible time for me. And that was when I decided my life was going to be in tune with the Lord, and I was going to hold to the rod. I literally thought, I will grab to this rod, the Word of God, and hang on through the mists of darkness. And I knew that I would have help to come out of it. And I did. And so it set my course where I was going. And I was going to be true to my convictions the rest of my life. And I just hope I can endure to the end.
Joan is an exemplary woman. She is full of faith, light, and hope. She has given so much service and love to her parents, her siblings, her friends, her students, her congregation, her children, and her husband. She has truly dedicated her life to the Lord. Thank you to Mary Ellen Rosen for making this episode possible, and a huge thank you to Joan for being interviewed. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.